Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's me, Wayne Klingman here with another show of Radio Free Mafia. I don't know what happened to the bumper music, but I think the bumper music didn't go off today because on the line we have with us now the man himself who saved me from a horrible situation in Guatemala, who saved me from a hanging in Cuba, who single-handedly rescued me from the deepest, darkest prisons of Mozambique, and single-handedly saved me from 100 virgins seeking to take my ass off this world in Saudi Arabia. Yes, I mean the one, the only, the extremely good-looking fashion icon of the stars, Christian Cipollini. Good morning, sir. How are you doing today?
Thank you. And, hey, anytime I can save you from pygmy porn stars or whatever else you need, let me know.
I'll do that. But it's been a while since we talked on the show, and we know of your great work in all kinds of trained organized crime with Lucky Luciano and all kinds of cool stuff, books and stuff you've written. But I understand that you have a new project you'd like to talk about. Can you tell us about it, please?
I will. And as a matter of fact, speaking of that, since you have the wonderful book Narco Saints out, this ties in really well with that.
It does.
Of course, yeah, the narco trafficking. Since your book came out and reminded me when we talked that maybe I should talk a little more about the project I've been whispering about on and off for the last year or so, which has to do with cartel hitman El Mano Negra, which he was recently convicted last year in May of more murders, totaling close to 40 over almost the same period of time. So I'm going to be, in a nutshell, releasing his first-person memoirs here in the near future.
Wow. Well, so let me understand this correctly. You have his memoirs of a hitman for working for the cartels that killed over 40 people in a period of time?
Right. Yeah, for those that don't know, a couple years ago, his name is Jose Manuel Martinez. He contacted me through a mutual friend, if you will, and wanted me to possibly write his book. I kind of hem-hawed around about it for a little while because I had a lot on my plate back then, and then I realized what was presented in front of me. I started talking to Jose, and I don't know how to put this except I kind of liked him. There was definitely, you know, a sinister part of him, but a charming part. You know, like anyone, you know, dynamic, multiple layers to that onion. So after speaking for a long time, he managed to get his handwritten memoirs into my hands. And I thought about it long and hard, Wayne, how I was going to do this. Do I do, you know, a narrative? Do I just, you know, do I want to just piece it out? What do I want to do? And without giving away the whole cow with the milk, I decided in his own words is perhaps the best way to tell this story as it was presented to me. And being that we have lots of police reports, coroner's reports, photos, and again, for those that don't know, my expertise, whatever, in narco trafficking, throw in that to give some context to his role in the large scheme of drug trafficking. And if you want me, what he is, the short answer is El Mano Negra was a sanctioned cartel hitman, worked mostly in the United States, largely in California, but has hit about a dozen states over 30 plus years. And he got caught in 2013 for a murder in Alabama. When he confessed to that murder, he also confessed to his entire history of these crimes. And side note, interestingly, he didn't rat anyone out in the process. I know this is a big, bone of contention when it comes to organized crime and turning state's witness. It wasn't anything like that. It was basically he hung himself out to dry and remained very protective of those people whom he worked for and or worked with.
Incredible. So I have to ask the first question out of the box is, for X number of years, this man in the United States got orders to kill other people in the United States from cartel leadership located in Mexico. Do I understand that correctly?
The way the cartel structure his direct boss was located in California, and his direct boss would answer to someone in Mexico down the line. There's other people in between, but basically, for the simplified version. And Jose was essentially, his job was to collect debts. I should point this out first, because when people think of hitmen and cartels, like, oh, just go get your enemy or whatever, it was more, his case here was more of a, if you can get the money, get the money. Because, I'm going to paraphrase something he had told me once, is the money isn't in killing people. The money is in actually collecting the debt. So if you had, drug dealers in Southern California that had narcotics on credit with the cartel and they hadn't paid back in due time, they get a warning or whatever, and if they don't abide or whatever, then El Mano Negra would visit them. In some cases, he was specifically told, kill these people, and in others, it was kidnap these people, and sometimes it was, hey, go try to get this money from these people, and if they don't give it, then, what the alternative is. But, that's it. He worked mostly in the United States, but he would go to Mexico sometimes himself for certain things.
Sure. I just find this whole thing fascinating, because we're told in the news for God forever that soon one day the cartels are going to be in the United States. We better do something about it now. But we both know the cartels have been in the United States for quite some time.
God, we could go on and on forever about that. We'll just, it's basic economics. The Mexican cartels have a commodity, a product that has not gone out of style, likely will not go out of style, is constantly consumable and replaceable. The market is controlled by supply and demand. Of course they're going to be here, and they're going to be everywhere else. Just a few years ago, Chicago was having a hell of a problem with El Chapo's group. In Chicago. This is – and, of course, you go back to digging the tunnels, and before Chapo's name in particular. And I do, Wayne, you know this, but I'll say this. The reason I keep talking about Chapo in particular is because – Mano Negra had, though he was very careful about who he talked about to the authorities, he did kind of make it clear that down the line who he largely worked for was the Sinaloa cartel. He was very, very proud of that because his family was from Sinaloa. And he's very, very loyal to that. So anyway, back to the El Chapo. They were digging tunnels in the late 80s. Of course they were bringing in. And I'm not even going to go on a tangent back to the late 30s and early 40s when people like Bugsy Siegel were out west allegedly setting up narco trafficking across the border. So,
Las Vegas,
shit didn't start. Right. I love to tell people, look, the war on drugs did not start in 1970 when Nixon announced it. Believe me, it started in about 1914 through 1919. It's just nobody knew it yet that it was starting and officially began in 1930. So this has been going on for a long time. But as for our guy, hey, he grew up in California, and is most migrant, you know, Mexican workers worked on ranches. He had a pretty horrendous kind of event happen while he was a teenager. That teamed with the fact that everybody knew, you know, drug dealers and traffickers, and, you know, somehow you end up doing this for a living. That's really the short abridged version. I know I've kind of gone off here, but anyway, that's,
no, it,
yeah.
This is absolutely fascinating because the cartels have been here for a while, right, as we just discussed. I myself was blown away. We had two young men originally out of Milwaukee, were in trial in Chicago for activities they did in Mexico, and they talked in an open courtroom about all the property they were buying for the cartels in Chicago. It's my God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people are saying, oh, my God, I didn't know. It's what do you mean? Do you not read the newspaper? Do you hide in Iraq? I mean, I don't get this. And now we have memoirs from a person who had an active role. Can I call it debt collecting?
Yeah. Yeah, that is really where, you know, vocation-wise, that's what he was supposed to do, and that is where you would make the most money in that field, is the actual, yeah, debt collection.
Incredible. Incredible. And so for a period of years, I don't know how to say this, so for a period of years he was debt collecting. Sometimes he got the money, sometimes he left bodies behind, but he was doing different criminal activities. And only through sheer accident, I understand, if I understand what I read in the newspaper correctly, was he caught. Do I understand that correctly, or am I wrong?
It's pretty on point. I want to put it this way. When you are a professional killer, though that is your job, imagine – okay, the sociopathy that naturally would have to exist in order to do that. But pair that with, if you have basically been killing for decades professionally, haven't been caught, rarely even been a suspect in most of them, and then someone pisses you off, the natural ego of thinking, well, I'm just going to kill him then. That's where you get caught, and that's exactly what happens. Again, I don't want to give away everything, but suffice to say, in 2013, there was a murder in Alabama, and the suspect was a young man who was dating Jose's daughter at the time. And this kid, as far as everybody, including intimates to the case that I spoke to, kind of knew this kid didn't do this, but was there and was terrified, and little did this Alabama town know they were about to deal with a professional sicario when Jose was caught crossing the border in Arizona. They realized he was wanted in Alabama, extradited him, and that's when he admitted. But the situation, to what you were mentioning, is and this is in the newspaper, so it's not really a big secret. What started all this is there was an individual who was repeatedly talking some serious smack on Jose's daughter, and this got back to Jose. So he killed this individual in the presence of the boyfriend at the time, who most of us pretty much believe had no idea this was about to happen. And had no idea who his potential father-in-law was. Well,
yeah.
Jose immediately after the killing, you know, went and laid low in Mexico. But there were some things that happened during the investigation that caused him to want to come back. I'm not going to give all that away, but there were some things that drew his ire. He was hearing about this investigation, and he was trying to return, and when he did, he got nabbed, and he basically gave them the whole story after that. But to the earlier statements I was making, that was a case of had nothing to do with the cartel. That was a father who most, by most accounts, most people I've spoken to also agree, he loves his family. And that individual drew his ire to the point that I'm going to, you know, boom, kill him. The problem is when you're a professional killer and you're getting away with it, basically, and you do something out of personal vengeance, that's where you tend to get caught. In my experience of studying this stuff, that's usually when you're going to get caught.
Yeah, I can understand a lot of the points. I live in a primarily Hispanic neighborhood. Now, over the last 20 years, it's changed from African-American to Hispanic, and we see values change quickly. And I know, even though some of these people aren't the nicest people in the world like anywhere else, that there is an 100% loyal to the family, and heaven forbid if you screw with their women. It's not usually a good thing.
All right. All right. I mean, it is. It's a cultural thing. It is what it is. And I should probably point out too, the way I took me forever to decide exactly how to do this book. I decided again. Look, I'm not going to necessarily be the judge or jury here. I'm going to kind of let him tell it his way, the way it was told to me, and let the reader decide what they think.
Absolutely.
I mean, this man's been called a serial killer by some media. He's been called a cartel hitman by others. Some people just know him as Grandpa. I mean, there are, again, there's many, many layers here. I'm going to do this and let y'all, you know, judge what you think or decide, because I that's just the way I think this is going to work the best.
I concur with that, because let him tell his story. And this, and your job, if I understand correctly, I think that I do, and your job is making sure we're going to understand what his story is he's trying to tell us.
Right. My job for this one, more than, again, it's a typical narrative prose kind of writer or, you know, historical look at it. What I'll do is corroborate, because I have, you know, testimony documents and, again, the coroner's reports and police reports and some interviews with some people who named and some who prefer not to be named. And basically with what knowledge I can bring and photographs of kind of the history in a nutshell of the narco trafficking trade going all the way back to Escobar, because that is relevant to El Chapo, which is obviously relevant to El Mano Negra. And try to tie that way. I'll fill in some contextual blanks is throughout the book. I'm going to try not to overburden it. I want people to kind of read this as if they were looking at this dude's diary. Like, imagine the scenario: you're in the back of an Uber car, there's somebody left their diary there, you pick it up, start reading it, and you're like, oh my god, that's kind of what I want. But I obviously have to have the context. And Wayne, you know me and my stuff, I am a whore for visuals. I just love imagery, and I try to pack anything I do with lots of amazing photographs and diagrams and illustrations, and believe me, this book is going to be filled with a lot of that. So,
outstanding. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
This book will give us, Joe Blow American, in the comfort of a living room, basically we get to see what life was like for a cartel hitman, day-to-day activities.
Yes, and though there aren't, if I can just add, I know I'm sorry. There's plenty of books out there in kind of memoirs-ish kind of books on mafia hitmen. Even, you know, we've had Zelda Blanco's people, you know, hitman do one. We've had Escobar's guy come out. And these are all fascinating. Like, I eat this stuff up. But this one, another reason I even signed on to this is it was a little different because here we're talking about, dare I say, a local boy. One of our own who is and connected, but it's different in the way – everybody has a backstory and behind closed doors you don't know, and how he even got into this as a teenager is – a combination of heartbreaking, heartless, and I don't want to say it'll make you have any compassion necessarily, but kinda. And I know that's so vague and elusive. I'm trying not to say. It's just I was really drawn to the bigger picture of it, and then when you read his words and you see the mix of when he's telling a story out from one minute it's like doing drugs and hanging out with girls in hotel rooms to how much he doted on his family to how he maybe screwed someone over to how then it was like I gotta go to Iowa and shoot this guy in the head, it's not. It's comical in a way. I know that some people take this the wrong way, but there are moments that are comical, and I know there were victims and people suffered for this. You know, it's hard to balance it in my field. You know, I'm telling you things you already know, but it's got all those elements. Okay, it's like it's better than Investigation Discovery. It's got
far better. I mean,
it's got everything.
I'm sorry, right. You apologize.
No,
please.
Go ahead. I was just rambling on that there's a lot of books written, that kind of from the perspective of the killer or whatever. This one I hope really reads like a diary, except it's got like the figurative footnotes to go with it in the glossary terms and all that. But he's a fascinating dude. Sure, there's lots of great memoirs and biographies of people. In fact, there's already some things written about Jose out there, and I've heard there's other books coming out. I don't know, that any are similar to mine or not, but I'll say this. I physically have all those pages, among other things, and I do talk to him on a regular basis. So I can assure you, this is going to be good stuff. Oh, and
I know you're
cut any corners.
No, be absolutely what we want to read. I mean, in my opinion, your stuff is so much better than something I'll refer to as a Lifetime movie.
Which anybody else
is going to give us.
Exactly, and though it's not about competition. I mean, there's a million books about Lucky Luciano too. I just filled a niche when I wrote that one, and it's still my most consistently selling book. Is because I wanted to fill in that niche with filling in blanks on his life. There's a million books. I have them all. I reference them, and I'm like, okay, well, what were the parts of the story that haven't been connected or fit? And that's what I tried to do with that book. It was almost like cute, wonderful, sinister little anecdotal chapters. Where this, I'm filling in a big, big gap, I think, because his full story hasn't been told, all, sequenced together. And anything else that's out there, it will be different angles of that story. Mine is going to be his angle.
Right. And I have to say this, on some books I like to read about written by people involved in the cartels. Sadly, I don't speak Spanish, and I can only find Spanish versions of them. That's my bad. At least
and there's
I
some
read
good ones out
them,
there. I'm with you. My Spanish is
My Spanish sucks. I want to get the. There's one in particular I want to get someday when I can read Spanish. But yours will be in English, which means I can read it. It'll have references to it. I can check them out to learn more. And most importantly, have you seen the TV show called Cartel Crew?
No, I've heard a lot about this. I have not. Sadly, I don't get a lot of time. It took me forever to finally watch Narcos. Took me forever to watch the El Chapo series that was on Netflix as well. Of course, once I do sit down and watch something, I binge it. Like, I don't move for 3 days. But it's rare when I get to.
I'll say this. I have unfortunately seen a couple of the Cartel Crew shows on VH1. And I'll be blunt. Our man, the guy they're writing about, right, is in prison. He's not getting out of prison anytime soon. He'll be punished for his crime. There's no doubt about that, right? I mean, we can tell you about Hell's Life and how those things go on. Other people have written books about life in that sort of situation. Very few of them make them out to be victims. I've not heard you say, nor do I believe, and I could be wrong, correct me if I am, that our friend is going to say, listen, to say, it's not my fault. Someone else made me do these things, right? When you watch the Cartel Crew, they try to get off and pretending they're victims. The El Chapo's wife, who is American, I'm sorry, I'm not going to try to swear at my own show, who is an American citizen, who goes on that show pimping a clothing line, basically saying, oh, woe is me. What?
Oh, right. Well, there's certainly that dichotomy. Everybody wants the market off of it. And I'll say this. I'll play devil's advocate to even people who point, you know, the finger at writers and those who consume it. Yeah, sure. I mean, obviously, I want to make money. I'm not good at a lot of things. But what I am good at is this kind of stuff. And sure, I want to make a living. And I get it. They do, but don't cry. You know, no, I agree with you. It's like, whoa, don't cry the blues. I do understand, you know, the feds probably took as much of their money as possible because that's what they do. That's a whole other thing, too, though. I do have a big problem with seizing assets until someone is proven guilty. I still don't see how that works. But that's a whole other thing. And again, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. On the other side, like, hey, look, I don't care. You want a clothing line? Cool. Don't cry, but please don't, you know, tell me woe is me. If you're going to be able to market a lot off of this, good for you. Don't cry about it. You know, you got TV shows and all that shit. I'm all for it. Just let's not sit here and act like, whoa. Yeah, it was a tough life. I can't even imagine. I'm saying from – whether you want to call it being fortunate or not, to be privy to people who lived the underworld life in general, over the years of doing this, I've gotten to know, and I can tell you, it don't sound like it's all that glamorous and fun at the end of every day, but there's a lot of money and a lot of, dare I say, fame that comes from that, and people are capitalizing on it. Obviously, don't pretend like you're not. That's the whole thing. I mean, don't pretend like you're not. My guy, not to compare apples and oranges, there's some parts of it that you'll be like, wow, man, this kind of what he kind of was a victim in a way. And other times you're like, oh, shit, man, he outright just – he loved doing what he did. No ifs, ands, or buts about it at the end of the day. So there's no whining and crying as much. Just, yeah, you know. But he's also like every one of them, everybody, hey, if I can get, you know, some fame and money out of this, of course,
well,
you know, they're going to jump at it.
I said some things wrong there. Let me correct one aspect of it, right? I understand that I live in the same way, right? I've met men my age who came to the United States because their choices were either they stayed in Mexico, they would be forced to doing things they did not want to do, among meals become bring drugs across the United States, which they did not want anything to do with, right? Or be forced to work in other fields doing things they knew would get them in trouble. If they got caught, they would go to prison, right? So they did what anybody could do, would do, I think, in my opinion, is if they couldn't fight to be free, they fled. I do the same thing, right? I do exactly the same thing.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I get the horrors that those people went through, 100,000%. I get the horrors that young women went through, especially in some of the cartel-owned controlled towns. And if one of the leaders wanted you, you went with them because you did not have a choice. You did not have a choice.
Right.
I get that, right? I do understand. I have a lot of hostility to those people who, in the case of Chapel's wife, one of many, you know, has more money than God. And now she's got some, basically, this guest starring appearances, where she's pimping her clothes, and she says, "No, it's my fault. Honey, when you didn't do anything about your husband, when you could have, when you easily could have, and helped him kill, what, 50,000 people have died in that state of Mexico alone over the last several years?"
Right.
And that blood's not in your hands. I'm sorry. I apologize. I got my high horse. I have my high horse, and I do apologize for that.
No, I mean, there's naturally going to be outbursts. But the thing is, with that, all of this, because it's so relevant, whether you're talking about pop culture, economics as a whole, cultural divides, the state of the world as it is, it's all relevant and gets people fired up and talking.
Yep.
And maybe that's the best thing, though it's angering to some on one hand. It's, you know, it's this glamorous entertainment on another hand. It's a mix of everything, but as long as it gets us into discussion, as this just did. And none of us, I think, for the most part, are sitting here saying we have all the fucking answers, because we don't. I don't.
No, I don't either.
But,
I don't even remember where to begin.
We have to kind of vet out our opinions and our complaints. And I've had to learn to accept this, too, for when people find certain things. What, you know, when I meet criticism even of what I'm doing, and then I have to stop for a moment, reel myself in, and realize, wait, they have they might have some validity to the reason they think that, and let me try to understand that, because then that may help me in understanding the bigger effects of all of this, that even what I research and write about, because it does have compounded massive effects on the world. Now we're talking global. This is just like everything
else.
This isn't your local neighborhood. It's in your local neighborhood. Like my guy, you know, I'll get off that tangent for a second. I would segue to back to what we were talking about. You and I briefly mentioned this off air. I wanted to say too, if you want to get a taste of what Jose was about, there is plenty of press out there. Since he got caught in 2013, and particularly in last year when he was convicted for Florida murders and evaded the electric chair. But to that, before my book comes out, I just signed on to put a little piece of it in an anthology coming out real soon. We can post links and stuff like that and give all that info once I have more. But basically, it's a true crime anthology that I was talking to the author who's running this, and this story should fit. I'm going to pick one that's more centered on a small town, because that's the theme of it. And he killed in cities, but he also killed in small towns right around where he lived. And I think I found one that's very unusual, that basically the killer among us, you know, that old cliche, and nobody knew, and those who didn't know who he was, you know, or didn't mess with him. But basically, it is that scenario. Like, wow, who would have thought in 2009, right, in the neighboring town, this guy killed, well, he killed a bunch of people around that area, and all this time he was a cartel hitman.
Yeah, who would have guessed? That's so fascinating stuff. Because
that's what So I'll be throwing, like, a teaser. It'll be, you know, a section of this anthology, and I think he's trying to put it out, like, within the next, I don't know, 2 months. So you should have a taste of El Mano Negra very soon.
Outstanding. So where can we find your work now? If we're going to go in this program and if you go and get it, where would we get it at?
All right. Currently, if you visit my website, of course, I have to pimp that. It's ganglandlegends.com. You can find out about me if you're curious what I've done. And sometimes when I have them available, I have my comic books and books right through my website, which I will sign if so desired. Also, my books are available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can pretty much find them anywhere, you know, books are sold. And I have 3 books out. And a comic book series. Oh, yeah, and I'm really excited. The 3rd chapter in the 4-part comic book series based on Lucky Luciano is about to release on Comixology any day now. I'm really excited. It's definitely the most violent, historically accurate as we can get it, chapter in Lucky's life. And then the 4th one should be out probably this spring in a full graphic novel by this summer. So I'm pretty excited about that. But you can find that at Comixology, Gangland Legends. And I always post stuff on social media. Gangland Legend is my handle on most social media. And Gangland Legends is my website.
Outstanding. Let me ask you this question. At one time, I think I saw a Facebook photo of you, and you were wearing a hat about our friend. Are those hats available?
Oh, yes. Okay, well, speaking of the merchandising, see, I'm guilty too. Part of what Jose wanted, in a nutshell, is I'm not even going to mince words about this. He wanted notoriety. And I said, well, I have some familiarity in some merchandise stuff. And we created snapback hats with the logo, basically his mugshot, illustrated out on the hats. Those are listed on my website now. I haven't really pushed them yet because I wanted to wait for the book. But the hats are pretty dope, pun intended. And they are now available on my website. And we don't have a lot of them. But they came out really, really cool. They're just kind of badass, I have to say. So, yeah, we're going to have we have hats available. The anthology should be out in a couple months. And my full book should be out by summertime, probably. So, there. Yeah, and come visit, say hello, or, you know, complain something, anything. Usually answer my messages.
Good. It's good to see you so active in social media. I mean, that's how we met, and I'm always impressed about how you like to interact with your fans, answer questions, and give guidance to more research material. If somebody says wants to read more about whatever, if you know where they can get the information, you're very, very free about where to find it, which, I mean, I really,
yeah,
really appreciate.
Yeah, I try to pay it forward. I do. I mean, a lot of people helped me. I didn't just step into this. There was a million people I could thank for the support and guidance, and I don't know, my little ways is, I love it, and I hope somebody after me finds even more than I did on something, you know, like, you be the next one to find the figurative needle in a haystack. That would make me happy. So, yeah, I do, I try to be as human and personable as I possibly can.
Outstanding. I'm glad to see it. Now, what's the most surprising thing you've so far found out about our friend?
Well, if I told you, I'd have to. I'm saving that for. There's a lot of surprises, even for me, over the course of the 2 years that I've got to know him. I don't want to give away some of the major ones yet, but I will say maybe I personally am surprised at how quickly he can go from sensitive family man to, like the time he said, I asked him what he missed the most, and he's like, guns and blood. I was like, wow. Yeah. But speaking of surprising and or shocking, that I didn't know if I wanted to pick this particular segment for this anthology because it's definitely one of the more shocking ones. But the one I'm putting in there in that anthology is definitely one of the most unusual things that happened that he did. Just the entire thing, I'll say that. That's pretty out there. But, I mean, come on, anything you read about the narco trafficking, I mean, you know from your book, from everything we see on the news, everything that I've covered, there's never a dull moment, and there's always something more bizarre than the last thing you thought you could possibly take. Yeah.
And if I may mention narco things just for a second, when I was working with Chris on the book, Vanderhey on the book, not this great guy, Chris, who wrote the forward to my book, and Frank, by the way, which I want to internally grateful for, we came up with all kinds of weird shit to do, right? It's crime fiction, we can do what we want, right? And long and behold, then we started reading about our good friend Jeffrey Epstein, who did not kill himself. And long and behold, the stuff we've read from those limited information released, he was doing himself. It's like, wait a second, we were talking fiction, crazy fiction. Here's some other guy who was really, truly doing it. What's more amazing is he was able to get by with it for years. What the hell?
Right, and truth is stranger than fiction sometimes because it comes out and you see also how art imitates life, vice versa. Isn't it crazy? It's a weird thing when you wrote that book, you look, and the things, the fictionalized things, though, are very real things in Narco Saints. So, you know, it's a bizarre thing, what we do.
It's a bizarre thing. It's a very, very reality is truly stranger than fiction in many, many times, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
To me, I much rather read about someone like your friend in safety and comfort in my living room, knowing I'm not going to owe anybody in the cartels any money to the best of my ability, right?
If I do,
I pay them off because I don't want them knocking on my door to collect that debt.
Exactly. It is. The ultimate lesson here is, and it's been since dating back to the time we started writing about, you know, the American mob, during the Prohibition era. This is a business. It is very lucrative. They didn't originate with the existing intention to kill people, but that is an unfortunate natural element of an illicit business, because the only way to police that business, again, sadly, is through violence generally. So, yeah, you don't really want to get involved unless you really do, and just know what comes with it when you do. And you're right. Yeah, don't get into drug debt. Don't, you know, piss with them. And here's the lesson to anyone who says about the war on drugs and make the drugs go away, put everybody in jail. Look, that hasn't worked yet. It's a commodity that people still want, and I'll go back to a quote of an unnamed individual during Pablo Escobar's time. It was interviewed from his hometown, and he was asked by an American reporter, you know, what do you think of Pablo Escobar, this drug lord? And I'm going to paraphrase, but the gentleman from the town said, look, he goes, if you weren't buying all these drugs, there wouldn't be any drug lords. So there you go, peeps.
There you go, that's right.
It's pretty fucking profound if you ask me.
Yes, to think that, in my opinion, that the fact that we have people with more money than sense, who will spend more money than God to get high for 15 or 20 minutes, just to do it again a couple more times that day, is killing not only Americans but Mexicans. And if we owe anyone reparations, which is a sore point with me when it comes to some aspects of American history, we owe it to the Mexican people, because it was Americans that killed them like reaping wheat. Because
right.
Would it be suffering?
Yeah. Absolutely. Break out the history books, boys and girls, because there's a lot you probably weren't taught about all of this. And you're right. There's, again, if we had all the answers, we could bottle it and sell it, but we don't.
You could.
I know I don't.
No. I don't know where to begin. I mean, the way we begin is by being educated. The way we become educated by reading the books like the ones that you write, right? Because that gives us a basis of understanding so we can make the decisions we need to make as American voters, right?
I know
we
ultimately,
won't get the facts.
Yes.
You know, we know we won't get the facts from
The books, obviously, if they're not entertaining or scholarly, they're not having a point. But they have to be a beautiful mix of both, in the sense that you want to be able to be drawn in and entertained enough to take this info in, and you need that info to be as accurate as possible and be relevant. And the relevance, even into the 20th century history that I deal with predominantly, is still relevant today, because, A, we're still fighting these battles. We still have cultural divides. The reason – I'm not trying to explain away why things happen and make it okay, but, you know, why did for example, you mentioned Lucky Luciano. Okay, so why did some Italian and Jewish kids from lower Manhattan in, you know, the early 1920s decide to be criminals when others went on to be doctors, lawyers, and, you know, priests and rabbis? Well, I'm not making excuses, but when some really in our society are the bottom rung of whatever, you know, ethnic group is above them at the time, some people are going to take that route. They are smart people.
Yep.
They are caught up, and there's nature versus nurture plays into it. Economics plays into it. Ethnicity, culture, subculture, all of it plays into it. And that's what I want people, when they read any kind of books like this, take from that. Now we're getting into the psychology of it. I want people to take that from any book you read on any of these subjects. Take all of that in mind when you're reading this, and hope to gain maybe not a different perspective, but a more educated perspective of it make, you know, your decision, or how someday maybe we'll figure some of this out.
If we ever can. And you're absolutely correct, because going back to my experience here in Racine, only when I became involved in the Mexican-American community, or the Hispanic immigration, right, when I became, for a brief period of time, vice president of the local Hispanic Chamber of Commerce as a volunteer, did I have the opportunity to talk to people from Mexico just like I'm talking to you, right? Only
right.
Then did they tell me stories of their own lives. Obviously, some of them like people do. I do. We all do, right? But
right.
Not all of them, by any means. Not all of them. And you learn. So you want to find out why they did those things, what happened to them, why those incidents happened to that country in the period of time that they talked about. So you look into things like the Mexican Revolution. Look into things about PMI, you know, and the whole
right.
nine yards, and become educated, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Which
No, you're absolutely right.
You know, I mean, why?
I like to think, like with Colombia, and, you know, the Escobar thing is a big thing for me. I'm like, whoa, you got to look at the backstory on Colombia itself, pre Pablo Escobar. And wow, yeah, you know, until I had read some of the great books that were on that him and that subject, again, what you were saying, it's way more than, let's just talk about a gangster. Way more than that. And the same with Jose. There's way more to Jose than being a cold-blooded killer, though we can't discount that element of it. So that always still needs to be kept in mind, because a lot of us have gone through shit in our lives, and some of us have even been from cheap parts of town where a lot was going on. But back to the earlier thing, you know, why did Lucky Luciano and Meyer Lansky become gangsters when they were both super smart and could have, you know, and they basically structured an entire business model except criminal? Why didn't they go be, you know, CEOs? Well, that's the, you know, million-dollar question. The point being, though, some people do go one route and some go the other. Just keep in mind, you know, not all legit people are totally legit, and not all illegitimate people are totally illegit, okay?
Yeah.
There's three.
Yeah,
how do we say this? There's three sides to every story, my people, three. And the murky middle is where the truth is. That third side, it's just most of us are never really going to get, you know, through that fog.
No, most of us will never go through that fog, or even understand what we see, if we should even peek into that fog for a bit. Because in my opinion, for what it's worth, large parts of society over the years, over the generations, over the centuries, have done everything they could do to keep us from looking into that fog.
Yeah, that's a topic for a whole nother show. I'll preface by saying I am a natural skeptic, which makes it good in what I do. However, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, generally speaking. That said, I have found that when you get past the crazy ones, yes, I said that, the crazy ones who think everything is a conspiracy, and the ones on the other side who think everything you read is black and white. In between there is where the truth is, and you find there is a merging of things. Again, truth is stranger than fiction. There are conspiracies. There have been historically, always have been. And we're just not supposed to know it. And then there is some black and white stuff to the world. I used to believe that way more, found there's a lot more gray area in all of this now, but there are still some constants, I guess. Non-variables, constants in the world. It's just that when people have power and can play with stuff, you know, weird shit happens, and if we don't read our history and find out what kind of things really can happen, we're just going to keep doing it. Or playing dumb and being the sheep, as you know.
Yep.
Let's just follow along. That's what they told us.
That's what they told us. We can believe them. They're the, you know, they're X. We can trust them. Yeah, and we have to become involved. I mean, it's in my opinion, we all should go out and become educated and vote. I'll say that now. I'll come back from the dead and say that for a bit too, right? And for some reason, people don't want to do that. But at least, go to the library, pick up a book, read about a subject that interests you, right? Encourage your family to read. Encourage your kids, especially your kids, because they're the ones who get left behind after we go and have to fix this mess if they can. And they can only fix this mess if they have the education, the knowledge, to have an understanding of what's going on, how we got here, and what might they be able to do to fix it.
Exactly. Well said.
Well, thank you. I should do a speaking tour. Anyway, before we end the show, we need to know where we can find you again, where your webpage is, and how do we find you on your social media, sir?
Well, you can find me at ganglandlegends.com. That's my website. Sometimes you can even buy some stuff there. Also, if you want to pick up one of my books, that Amazon has them. Actually, they're sold out of two of them right now. I just found out, supposedly they're reprinting. Two of my three books are out. But Barnes & Noble supposedly has some in stock. And generally on social media, you can find me under the name Gangland Legend, and I'm everywhere. And as Wayne, you kindly said, yeah, I try to, you know, answer questions and interact as much as I can. You know, if anybody wants to say hi or has a question or a complaint, whatever, And keep your eyes out for True Crime Anthology coming out from Mitzi Cerrito in a couple months. I will have a little intro to our friend Jose Martinez El Mano Negra in there. And definitely check out Comixology, where you can digitally get the comic book series. I do have print copies sometimes available of those, too, if somebody wants a signed one. And, yeah, that's about that. All right, there's my pimping of my stuff.
One other quick question. Will you be at any adult conventions anytime soon?
Yeah, since we even talk about that, for those that don't know, one of my dearest friends in the world is the legendary Tara Patrick, and I usually attend some of the conventions from her former realm with her every year, particularly Chicago and New Jersey, and might even do Miami this year. So, yes, I will be around, and we collaborate, too, so we'll have stuff and sign. Sometimes we do little seminars, book readings, that kind of thing. And I can't give away too much, but on that note, let's just say I'm in talks with another former colleague, if you will, of that realm of Tara's, about possibly helping out with her memoir. And I am currently involved in a graphic novel project with another former co-star with Tara. I'll leave it at that. Just say that we've got quite an interesting project outside of my world that I'm going to co-write with her. So I'm not even going to name names. Let's just say you might see all of us out.
Outstanding. That would be really, really cool. And if you're interested in finding my work, you can find mine easily. If you go to Amazon.com and enter my name, Wayne Klingman, with a C, and you'll see everything from my book on Frank to Narco Saints, my book I have on serial killers, promise me no end, evil people, yeah, I'll put it that way, and the like. But I do appreciate everybody listening to the show. I appreciate Chris's time for being on the show. He's such a busy guy. And with all of out there, I wish you all the very, very best of days, and hopefully to bring you on another show soon. With that, sir, you guys have a great day.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, bye-bye. Once again, you can find my stuff on Amazon. Enter my name, Wayne Klingman. All of its stuff will appear on my office page. Yeah, I got to fix up that paragraph. And again, with that, everybody have a fantastically cool day, and I appreciate everybody listening to the show. All right, talk to you all later. Bye.